Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I will be reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 25th, and I will cover the state and local news. Water Lecture details complex, important resource by Stuart Doreen. This week, at-large Councilman Dan Corrales provided details during a lunch and learn at the Bush Convention Center for those interested in where does Midland get its water, and where are we now, and how we got here. Corrales, supported by city staff that provided detail, provided a history of Midland's water situation, broke down infrastructure in place, and provided explanation of Midland's relationship with the Colorado River Municipal Water District. He then explained Midland's T-Bar water project and how that happened during a drought-stricken part of the previous decade, and Midland's options looking to the future. The City of Midland's lease with Fort Stockton Holdings garnered attention during the most recent council meeting. Corrales and Utilities Director Carlos Crago provided context to why there was a need to deliver from that source in Pecos County. Midland's long-term supply won't support future growth, and why city officials can't wait as long as leaders did with T-Bar. Project price will continue to climb, and the city is also paying for water rights. The following is information from the presentation, which can be found in its entirety on Corrales City Councilman at Large Facebook page. The City of Midland is not a member city of the Colorado River Municipal Water District, or CRMWD. City officials refer to the 1966 contract with the CRMWD that forces the city to pay for a set amount each day. By 2030, that amount will be 17.5 million gallons a day, and the city pays even when it doesn't use the entire amount. The presentation showed that currently 70% of Midland's current water use comes from Lake Thomas, Lake Spence, and OHIV Reservoir, three CRMW water sources, although the City of Midland has slight ownership in Ivy. The other 30% comes from T-Bar and Clearwater water sources in Winkler County, sources developed last decade. The Paul Davis well field is not currently in use. The City of Midland was very reliant on the CRWMD, especially prior to 2011, when a once-in-a-generation drought impacted the region. At that time, Midlanders were using 42 billion gallons a day in water. A large percentage of that was used for outdoor watering, including lawns. As Corrales's presentation stated, the City of Midland put in water restrictions and price hikes to bring use to a more manageable level, considering Midland's water situation. Consumption decreased to 18.5 million gallons. Current demand is around 24 million to 28 million gallons a day, according to the presentation. Midland's contract with the CRMW will end in 2030. Midland City Council members have stated that having a pipeline built to the Fort Stockton Holdings water source will put the city in a better position to negotiate with the CRMW at the end of the decade. The T-Bar pipeline. There probably hasn't been an engineering marvel in the region like the engineering, planning, land acquisition, and building of a water pipeline from Winkler County to Midland in such a short timeline. The massive public works project included building 2 million and 5 million gallon tanks on site in Winkler County and 59 miles of 48-inch diameter transmission pipeline from the T-Bar Ranch wellfield to the terminal point within the City of Midland, according to Parkhill. And less than 12 months after the Midland County Freshwater District No. 1 and the City of Midland began the project, officials were celebrating its completion by drinking from glasses filled with water from the T-Bar pipeline. In the years since the T-Bar pipeline's completion on May 14, 2013, the pipeline showed its value, including the winter storm Uri in 2021. During the presentation, Corrales and city officials stated that CRMWD had power issues that impacted the district's ability to deliver water. The city of Midland, however, turned up the volume from T-Bar to keep water going to customers across the city. Without the T-Bar system, we would have been in the same boat as other cities, Crago said. About Fort Stockton Holdings Water. Some may remember the Fort Stockton Holdings saga. Clayton Williams fought the numerous entities in the region, including groundwater districts, to be able to move the water under his land. He and his family won in court, and after his passing, Fort Stockton Holdings is in business. That business includes a 2020 deal with the city of Midland that provides the city rights to water through 2070 for $261 million. According to Corrales' presentation, the deal involves partnering with the cities of San Angelo and Abilene to secure water rights and build infrastructure, including a pipeline for water delivery. The contract provides extensions through 2110. Midland collects 53% of the water and will be responsible for $137 million of the cost, according to the presentation. San Angelo and Abilene will pay $77 million and $45 million for 30% and 17.8%, respectively. The presentation also states the city of Midland pays $1.496 million a year to Fort Stockton Holdings from 2020 through 2024 and $1.686 million annually from 2025 through 2029. Crago said during the presentation that Fort Stockton will give the city of Midland, when a pipeline is complete, a third reliable source. That is needed, city officials said, as future growth will outpace supply. There is a current supply of approximately 34 million gallons a day to 40 million. Water from Pecos County will help increase max supply to 55 million. Other notables about Midland's water situation. If gaining water supply were easy, it would have been done by now. The city of Midland now moves into how to bring Fort Stockton Holdings water to Midland. That conversation is likely to start with delivering water to Midland and not to another pipeline, including the T-Bar pipeline, because of state language that prevents the city from using the T-Bar pipeline for anything other than city-owned water from Winkler County. The city also must deal with an expensive project. This could be more complicated by the fact that the city of Midland took over the Midland County Freshwater District's debt payments. The Texas Bond Review Board showed the city of Midland faces around $749.25 million in total debt payments, principal and interest, at the end of fiscal year 2022, according to the Bond Review Board. Government officials typically state bond debt doesn't matter as much as credit rating. There could also be decisions to be made about how much customers pay for water if the city of Midland's investment in the Fort Stockton Holdings rechargeable water source requires fee increases. Lastly, the city of Midland faces a large task of acquiring right-of-way no matter the route. The city of Midland is working with Park Hill, which was the choice of city staff. The Midland Rose is a club hookah lounge for everyone, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Off Wall Street on the west side of town sits the Midland Rose, a black, unassuming, rectangular building with faux greenery lining the windows. Inside, a spacious red and black club-like lounge offers amenities such as a full bar, DJ, bottle service, a pool table, and even hookah, a water pipe device used to smoke tobacco or herbal products. Anna Palco opened the Rose last June in hopes of bringing that big city feel to her hometown. Named after her late partner, she prides herself on creating a space for all walks of life, no matter race, sexuality, or even age. I was always told targeting and finding a specific audience is important for success, but diversity and having everyone being comfortable in the same room is way more important, Palko explained. Everyone comes in, mixes, and intertwines, and it's really cool. A large open area allows for people to get up and dance, while plenty of semicircled booth benches border the sides of the room for those wanting to have a more relaxed evening or place to themselves. In addition to her no hate, all love mantra, Palko also enjoys making the Rose an active part of the Midland community. On Sundays, you can find the Rose crew opening their doors a little early for barbecuing and beer pong tournaments. Thursdays run a college night special where 18-plus can join in on the fun. Fridays draw in a hip-hop-loving party crew, and Saturdays stay more low-key with comedy and an open mic. Once a month, the club holds an Afrobeat night, highlighting the fusion of sounds from Nigeria and other West African regions. Although the road to the Rose proves to be challenging, especially as a woman trying to break through thick Midland skin, Palko stays optimistic and proud of her business. With four kids always ready to help clean, decorate, and organize, the Midlander says the business feels even more special. After all, she owns what she calls the city's only hookah lounge. "I just want to give people a safe, fun place with great drinks, prices, and something different on this side of town that they don't have," Palko said. "It's definitely a diamond in the rough. Come check it out." The Midland Rose is open 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday and can be found at 3402 Thomason Drive. Smoking is allowed out back and trained security checks ID at the door, as well as operating metal detection protocols. To learn more about the Midland Rose and its event, such as the Black-owned business pop-up shop on Saturday, visit the business Instagram, www.instagram.com/therosemidland/. Slower sales continue inside Midland County housing market, by Stuart Doreen. The January slide again hit the Midland housing market, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. During the first month of the year, home sales again dropped, a common theme for January, according to the center, going back at least a decade. The number of sales across the county in January 2023 was 154, which was down from 190 in December and down from 175 in January 2022. Realtor Janine Pruitt Lyson of the Janine Pruitt team told the Reporter Telegram this week that the fourth quarter of 2022 showed a slower market in Midland County. A&M statistics confirmed that, as sales have been below 200 during three of the last 4 months. A&M also reported monthly sales numbers have dropped compared to the same month during the previous year, going back to June. Increased interest rates have played a factor, according to what realtors have told the Reporter Telegram. Pruitt Lyson expects that buyers will return to the market as rates normalize. "When I was in New York City at the Inman News Connect event, they named the fourth quarter the buyer strike," Pruitt Lyson wrote. Pruitt Lyson also stated that inventory in Midland County is steadily decreasing. The A&M Real Estate Center reported 514 homes available at the end of the month, the fewest for a January since 2019. Which was 358. Pruitt Lyson reported this week that the active number of listings in Midland to be 407 and the number of homes pending or under contract to be around 306. "If sales continue at this pace, we may see availability of homes for sale in the 300s, Pruitt Lyson wrote. Other notes from A&M's January report included the average price of a home sold in Midland County topped $300,000 for the 53rd straight month, a streak that goes back to September 2018, according to the Texas A&M University Real Estate Center. The average in January was $362,749. January also was 20th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. Interestingly, the median price for a home sold, $303,500, was the lowest during the 20-month streak and more than $20,000 lower than January 2022. The A&M Real Estate Center also showed that the median price drop in Midland compared to December was similar to trends taking place across the most populated counties in Texas. However, other more populated counties in West Texas showed median price increases in January, including Ector to $240,000, Tom Green to $249,900, Taylor $253,700, and Lubbock to $260,000. Midland County leaders to vote on Justice Center partnership by Ben Schaefer. The Midland County Commissioners Court will vote Monday on whether it wants to partner with Ector County to build the Permian Basin Regional Juvenile Justice Center, according to court documents. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett discussed the partnership on KWEL Radio on Wednesday. It would include both Midland and Ector counties paying $25 million each for the project with $40 million in state funding. Midland County agenda documents indicate state legislators will address funding for this project in the coming weeks. The location of the facility and project schedule have not been decided. Fawcett said on Wednesday that there is a possibility oil and gas companies could donate land for the project off Farm to Market Road 1788. "We're not just solving an Ector County problem. We're not just solving a Midland County problem," Fawcett said during the radio interview with Craig Anderson. "We're solving an entire West Texas problem just by simply working together." The Midland County Commissioner's Court will meet at 9 a.m. Monday at the Midland County Courthouse. Community Roundup by Stuart Doreen. Car Seat Check Event. The Midland Fire Department will host a free car seat check event this Monday at 1500 West Wall Street. Certified safety technicians will be present to inspect car seats and booster seats to ensure they are installed correctly. Please bring your child and know their weight and height. Appointments are not required for Monday's event, but if a person would like to schedule an appointment or have any questions, contact Autumn Stewart or Brianne Garcia at the Midland Fire Department at 432-685-7436. Community Calendar. Sewell Leadership Event, 8:30 a.m., March 2nd, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Spring Break, March 13th through 17th. Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series Event, an evening with Emmett Smith, 7 p.m., March 23rd, Schapp Center, Midland College. UTPB Distinguished Lecture Series, March 30th, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Upcoming meetings: Midland City Council, 10 o'clock a.m. Tuesday, Council Chambers, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland College Board, 4 p.m. Tuesday, Gibson Boardroom, PV House Administration Building. Midland ISD, Long Range Planning Committee, 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, Midland High School. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The Destination. Tejano Thirsty Thursday, March 2nd. Friday Night Live, Jerry Hart and Flatland, March 3rd. Stateline Band, March 4th. Karaoke Night, March 9th. Friday Night Live, Whiskey Cult, March 10th. Jet Black, Ronnie and the Redwoods, March 11th. Open Mic Night, March 16th. Friday Night Live, Thomas Christian, March 17th. Chase the Night, March 18th. Bring Your Own Blues Open Blues Jam, March 23rd. Horseshoe. Permian Basin Water in Energy Conference, March 1st and 2nd. Monster Truck Wars, March 18th. Whiskey Myers, March 31st. La Hacienda Event Center. Riot, March 4th. Queensryche, March 12th. Chase Matthews and Kid G, March 30th. La Zenda Norteña. Los Reconditos, La Zona X y Jare Franco, March 31st. Micro Market, Low Street Market, March 4th. Midland AF, Spring Art Crawl, March 3rd. Midland Community Theater, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Saturday, March 3rd through 4th. Sense and Sensibility, March 24th through April 15th. Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market, March 4th and 18th. The Tailgate, John Stork, March 3rd. Modern Pop-Up Market, March 4th. William Clark Green, Acoustic, March 11th. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Cheap Trick, February 28th. Brad Lely, Jazz Saxophonist, Pops and Family Series, March 4th. Hairspray, March 6th. Midland Festival Ballet presents Feel the Energy, March 9th through 11th. John Crist, The Emotional Support Tour, March 12th. Our Planet Live in Concert, March 13th. Yamato, The Drummers of Japan. Hinotori, The Wings of Phoenix, March 16th. Zach Williams, March 17th. Chris Delaia, March 24th. Maricela, La Dama de Hiera, March 25th. High Tide, March 28th. Joanne Shaw Taylor, March 29th. Mike Massimino, UTPB Shepherd Leadership Institute Distinguished Lecture Series, March 30th. Chad Prather and the Ragamuffins, March 31st. Ector County Sheriff's Office identifies man who died after jump from moving dumpster by Mercedes Cordero. A 45-year-old man died Thursday after jumping from a moving dumpster, according to the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Ector County Sheriff's Office deputies were dispatched Thursday at about 6:04 a.m. to West University Boulevard and Roundup Avenue in West Odessa in reference to a deceased person. Authorities have identified the man as Brandon Altman. Early investigation reports showed that Altman was in a dumpster when a garbage truck picked up the dumpster. It was later determined that Altman had initially been inside the dumpster, but had jumped from it as it was being emptied, falling to his death, according to an ECSO Facebook post. TV station KWS reported that the ECSO obtained surveillance video that showed an individual, Altman, jumping from the dumpster as it was almost to the point of dumping into the truck. No foul play is suspected. The next of kin has been notified. Midland Fugitive on Texas Most Wanted by Robin Bradshaw. The Texas Department of Public Safety recently added 47-year-old Santos Castillo Ramirez, a man with ties to the Midland-Odessa area, to the Texas 10 Most Wanted list. Ramirez is wanted for continuous sexual abuse of a child, stalking, and violating bond and a protective order. The state has offered $5,000 with information leading to his capture. Ramirez has a criminal past and is considered dangerous, according to the state website. He was convicted of burglary in 1993, then in 1996 was convicted of aggravated assault. In 2004, he was convicted of aggravated assault again and was sentenced to a 10-year confinement and probation. Then, on April 5, 2022, the Midland County Sheriff's Office issued the warrant for the child sex crimes he is now being charged with. For information on the whereabouts of Santos Castillo Ramirez, contact the Texas Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-252-TIPS or visit the Texas Department of Public Safety website. Teen Faces Murder Charge in Mall Shooting by Jamie Stengel. A 16-year-old boy who fatally shot a 17-year-old boy and wounded two others during a fight between two groups at a mall in El Paso, Texas, faces a murder charge and three counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, police said Friday. The suspect himself was shot and wounded by an armed bystander as he ran from the February 15th melee at Cielo Vista Mall, according to authorities. Police said the suspect, who had been referred to the juvenile probation department, was released from the hospital Wednesday. Police said the suspect used a handgun that had been reported stolen. The suspect allegedly opened fire after a confrontation between the two groups escalated into a physical fight. The police said he fatally shot 17-year-old Angeles Zaragoza and wounded the other 17-year-old boy, as well as a 20-year-old man who was part of his own group. He then allegedly ran toward the bystander and others while pointing his gun in their direction and was shot by the bystander. The bystander and an off-duty officer working security for a store helped render aid to the suspect and the others who were wounded, police said. Police said the three counts of aggravated assault are related to the two who were wounded and an 18-year-old woman who was not hurt. The juvenile allegedly pointed the gun at her. Crude prices steady as gas prices rebound. By Mella McEwen. Crude prices were largely stuck in neutral during a holiday-shortened trading week as traders mull rising U.S. stockpiles and a demand surge in China that has yet to appear. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange overcame Wednesday's $2.41 slump, adding $1.44 Thursday and an additional 93 cents Friday to end the week at $76.32, just 2 cents lower than last Friday's close of $76.34. Last week saw prices fall 4.2%. The posted price closed at $72.80, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices on the NYMEX broke out of their slump, rising 3 of 4 trading days. After falling 20 cents Tuesday, Henry Hub futures added 10 cents Wednesday, 14 cents Thursday, and another 13.7 cents Friday to close the week at 2.451 per MCF, up from 2.275 at last Friday's close. Any move of oil prices far outside the range expected by executives at PetroHunt LLC would cause the company to re-examine its plans, Douglas Hunt, director of acquisitions, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview, though he added he didn't expect prices would stay sharply higher or lower for an extended period. "We have a certain comfort in what we see for supply and demand," he added. The company is preparing to embark on a drilling program on its Loving County holdings, having taken out 5 drilling permits on its Copperhead lease earlier this month. "We do intend to have an operated rig on our Loving County assets beginning in early spring," Hunt said. "Our typical pattern is to drill for a steady period long term. We get better results if we operate a steady program rather than drilling 4 wells, going away, and then coming back to drill more wells." In his daily e-newsletter, Edward Moya, senior market analyst with Oanda, suggested that Friday's report that inflation measures were higher than expected in January, combined with revived momentum in consumer spending, raises the chance of even more interest rate increases. "A stronger dollar emerged from the reports," he wrote, suggesting the Federal Reserve might need to do more tightening to get inflation under control. "The risks that the Fed will have to send the economy into recession are growing. It is getting ugly on Wall Street as risk aversion runs wild, and that could keep oil prices heavy." Rig count ends February with 7-rig decline, by Mella McEwen. February was a rough month for drilling activity, with the rig count falling 3 of 4 weeks and drillers laying down the most rigs in a month since June of 2020. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday in its U.S. rig count, which it has issued weekly since the 1940s, sank 7 rigs to 753 for the week. That's still 103 rigs, or 15.8% more than the 650 counted last year. Even so, the rig count fell for a third consecutive month for the first time since July 2020. The count was down 18 in February. The number of oil rigs fell by 7 to 600, 78 more than the 522 drilling for oil last February, and down 9 for the month. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was unchanged at 151. The number of gas rigs fell by 9 in February, making its biggest drop since April of 2020. Texas reported 370 rigs unchanged for the week and 58 more than the 312 drilling across the state a year earlier. New Mexico dropped 2 rigs to 106, California 2, Colorado 1, Oklahoma 2, and West Virginia 3 joined New Mexico as producing states to see a decline, while Pennsylvania 3 was the only producing state to see an increase. The Permian Basin added one rig for 353. That's 44 more than the 309 rigs active across the region last year. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian with 57 rigs, down one for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico was second with 47 rigs unchanged. Martin County reported 40 rigs for a second week, followed by Reeves County with 34, unchanged for the week. Loving County added one rig for 30 at work within county lines, while Midland County held 24 rigs a second week. Howard County reported 21 rigs, down one. Upton County added one rig for 18, while Glasscock and Ward counties each reported 12 rigs, unchanged for the week. Enverus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus, said its U.S. reached 856 during the week ended February 22nd, rising by 11 from the previous week's high point. The count is down 2% last month and up 13% year over year. In the last week, the Permian count increased by 6 rigs to 345, while the Gulf Coast rose by 3 to 112. The Appalachia and Williston basins were flat at 55 and 42 rigs. The Anadarko Basin shed one rig to hit 67 running, while the DJ Basin added one to reach 20. Midland ranks third for mechanically inclined workers, report by Stuart Doreen. Mechanically inclined occupations in the energy sector have the highest growth projections compared to other mechanically inclined jobs, especially when it comes to long-term growth. That was the message from Construction Coverage Report about U.S. locations with the most mechanically inclined workers. The report showed Midland with a 31.8% of all workers in the Midland metro area holding occupations requiring a mechanical inclination as part of their regular work activities. Construction Coverage showed that was the third largest percentage of all small metros across the nation. Midland ranked behind Elkhart, Goshen, Indiana, 52.6%, and Sheboygan, Wisconsin, 33.1%. Other Texas cities ranking among the best in the nation included Houston and Dallas, among the largest metropolitan areas. The report showed Houston, the Woodlands Sugar Land, with a percentage of 23.4%, ranked 10th, and Dallas-Fort Worth, 22.1%, ranked 15th. More details from the report about Midland included a 47.9% concentration of mechanically inclined workers compared to the average, 30,290 mechanically inclined workers and $55,990 average wage for mechanically inclined workers. It is also listed heavy and tractor-trailer truck drivers as the most common of mechanically inclined occupations. About the energy sector, Construction Coverage reported wind turbine service technician positions with job descriptions that include installing, maintaining, and repairing wind turbines are expected to grow the most overall. The two-year projected employment growth for wind turbine service technicians is 16.2%, with a much larger 10-year projected employment growth of 69.6%. While the oil and gas roustabouts occupation, which has a primary responsibility of assembling or repairing oilfield equipment using hand and power tools, has the second largest short-term projected growth at 13.8%, the occupation falls to sixth when it comes to long-term projections at 29.7%. Comparatively, solar photovoltaic installers and individuals responsible for assembling, setting up, and maintaining solar rooftop systems have a smaller short-term growth projection at 12.9%, but a significantly larger 10-year growth projection of 51.7%. Here is a summary of the data for the Midland, Texas metro area. Share of mechanically inclined workers, 31.8%. Concentration of mechanically inclined workers compared to the average, 47.9%. Total mechanically inclined workers, 30,290. Average wage for mechanically inclined workers, $55,990. Most common mechanically inclined occupation, heavy and tractor-trailer truck drivers. For reference, here are the statistics for the entire United States. Share of mechanically inclined workers, 21.5%. Concentration of mechanically inclined workers compared to the average, not available. Total mechanically inclined workers, 30,334,850. Average wage for mechanically inclined workers, 50,821. Most common mechanically inclined occupation, laborers and freight, stock and material movers. City. Midland International reports second busiest January since 9/11 by Stuart Doreen. There was a boom in the number of passengers using airlines at Midland International Airport during the month of January. The City of Midland reported that 44,888 passengers boarded Southwest Airlines, American Eagle, and United. The total was a 29% increase over January 2022. The increase pushed the year-to-date total to 209,376, which was a 14.1% increase over fiscal year 2021 through 22. Southwest Airlines again led the three airlines operating at Midland International with 21,249 passengers, which was 47.3% of the total passenger total. Southwest also saw the greatest year-over-year change of the three airlines, 29%. The City of Midland also reported that parking revenues in January totaled $551,661, a 25.1% increase over January 2022. Through the first 4 months of the fiscal year, the city has reported collecting $2.295 million in parking revenue, a 26% increase over the first 4 months of the previous fiscal year. Report, Midlanders Increased Down Payment for a Home During Pandemic by Stuart Doreen. Midlanders' change in the median down payment of a home increased by 33% during the COVID pandemic, according to a study from Construction Coverage. Construction Coverage looked at U.S. locations with the largest increase in down payments during the pandemic. Midland's median down payment increased from $30,000 to $40,000. The 33% increase was greater than the national average, 20%. Construction Coverage reported the median down payment across the nation increased from $50,000 to $60,000. Prior to the pandemic, the median combined loan-to-value ratio for U.S. mortgages was around 75%, meaning that the typical buyer put 25% down on a home, the report stated. The figure fell to below 70% by the beginning of 2021 and remained there until rebounding back to 75% in the second quarter of 2022. A similar trend took place in the median debt-to-income ratio, which fell to a low of 34% in 2021 until early last year when mortgage rates began increasing. These figures suggest that buyers were using more of their own cash and personal savings to finance purchases during the pandemic. Construction Coverage reported a 100% increase in Odessa, which tied it with Amarillo and seven other communities across the nation for the top small metropolitan area across the country. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center has reported that the median price for a home in Midland has ranged from $282,500 to $340,000 from January 2019 to December 2022. In Ector County, that range was $196,000 from $262,750. Obituaries, Arch C. Martin. Arch Clevenger Martin of Northville, Michigan, passed away on October 11, 2022, at the age of 73. He was born on November 21, 1948, the third of four children. Arch spent his growing up years in Midland, Texas. Arch is survived by his son, Corydon Clevenger Martin of Northville, Michigan, by his brother, James C. Martin, and his sister, Suzanne C. Martin of Midland, Texas. Arch was preceded in death by his mother, Marjorie Clevenger Samples, by his stepfather, Jack Samples, and by his brother, Joseph Rabb Martin. As he wished, a celebration of Arch's life was held with family and close friends. Doyle Clifton Cliff Summers. Doyle Clifton Cliff Summers was born March 3, 1931, in Winters, Texas, the fourth of five children to Jesse James and Inez Dobbs Summers. He was preceded by his parents, brother Joe Summers, and sisters Nell and June. He is survived by his wife Jean of 70 years and Chuck Summers. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Howard Gene Kale. Howard Eugene Gene Kale, 86, peacefully passed away with his family by his side on February 23, 2023, at his Midland, Texas home. Gene Dada was born on May 6, 1936, in Linden, Texas. He is survived by his wife, Geneva Kale, daughter, Priscilla Kale Young, and son, Shane Kale. He's also survived by sisters, Morris Kale Turner and Mary K. Williams. Gene had four grandchildren and one great-grandchild. He is predeceased by his parents, Howard Kale and Betty Kale Brown, stepfather Luther Brown, and son Christopher Howard Kale. Visitation was held on Sunday, February 26th. A private family graveside will be held at Rest Haven Memorial, Midland, Texas, followed by a service at Crestview Baptist Church on Monday, February 27th, 2023, at 2 o'clock p.m. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Crestview Baptist Church, Forward by Faith, Hospice of Midland, and the Heart Association. Jack William Wells. Jack William Wells, 93, died peacefully, surrounded by family, on February 4, 2023, in Kerrville, Texas. Jack was born December 29, 1929, in Rockport, Indiana, and is predeceased by his wife Wanda Jones, his daughter Gretchen Dean, and his brother Jerry. He is survived by daughter Joni, two grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. Interment services for Jack's remains and those of his daughter Gretchen will be later this summer in Rockport, Indiana, at a date to be determined. Funeral arrangements are under the care of Wright's Funeral Parlor, Kerrville. Lee Jenkins. Raymond Lee Jenkins went to be with our Lord and Savior on Saturday, February 11, 2023. He is predeceased by his father, Vernon Lee Jenkins, and survived by his mother, Myrtle Jenkins, and sisters, Mary Loving, Elizabeth Anderson, and Linda Gully. Services for Lee will be at a later date in East Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to Cotton Flat Baptist Church in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Merle Burleson Taylor. Merle Burleson Taylor passed away on February 9, 2023 at Manor Park in Midland. She was born July 23, 1929, in El Paso, Texas, to Charles Clinton Bowers and Manila Pence Bowers. Merle married John Burleson in 1950. He died in 1993. Later, she married L.B. Taylor in 1996. L.B. passed away in 2023. Merle is survived by son Brian Burleson and stepchildren Tina Taylor, Terry Taylor, and Timothy Taylor. She also had five grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held for Merle and LB at Parks Faudry Family Chapel at Manor Park later in the spring. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the charity of one's choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Wanda Dale Berry. Wanda Dale Berry, age 80, of Midland, Texas, passed away on January 24, 2023 at 2:13 a.m. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 4, 2023 at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Wanda was born on September 19, 1942, outside of Asher, Oklahoma, to Lester and Iva Burks. Wanda is survived by her husband, Arvel Mickey Berry, son Mitchell Berry, and daughter Elizabeth von Schlockwitz. She has five grandchildren. She is also survived by her brother, Don Burks, and sister, Doris Regan. She is predeceased by son Randy Berry, parents Lester and Iva Burks, and brothers James and Bob Burks. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Brenda Job. Brenda Job, 82, of Midland, passed away February 22, 2023. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday, February 28th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, March 1st, 2023 at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Robert Chapman. Robert Chapman, 67, of Midland, passed away February 18, 2023. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, March 3, 2023, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 4, 2023, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'll be reading from the Odessa American from Saturday, September 25th, 2023. Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center showcases achievements to Regents by Ruth Campbell. From drones delivering medical supplies to partnerships with local hospitals and growing their own, Texas Tech University aboard Regents got a sampling of what the Health Sciences Center in Odessa has been up to during a Friday meeting. The meeting, which began Thursday, was held in the Academic Classroom Building in the Genevieve and Larry Milton Conference Center. Regional Dean Dr. Timothy Benton said there are 158 residents and fellows currently training in the Permian Basin. That is in the specialties of OBGYN, internal medicine, and psychiatry. New in 2022 was a surgery residency program that also included fellowships in childhood and adolescent psychiatry and endocrinology, for example. This year, we were approved for a cardiology fellowship. We'll start in July 2023. We have applications in for pulmonary and critical care fellowships, hopefully to also begin in July, Benton said. Texas Tech Health Sciences Family Medicine Program spans 8 counties in the Permian Basin and currently has 70 residents. The rural sites are in 6 counties, including southeastern New Mexico. The rural program began in 2014, and since its inception, over 8 years, we have 15 graduates from the program and 7 have stayed in rural practice, Benton said. Those residents over that time period in the rural Permian Basin have seen 15,000 clinic patients, so just by having the program has increased access to care in our region, he added. This was an even bigger vision to address health system issues and population health within our region, not only creating workforce, but we are expanding within that physical network to do additional things, to learn about our region and advance healthcare, meeting the mission of Texas Tech University Health Science Center, and in the particular vision of Dr. Rice Spearman of transforming healthcare. Dr. Lori Rice Spearman is the president of TTUHSC. As part of that, TTUHSC provides Medicine on the Move, which provides access to care, education, and telemedicine. In answer to a question from a regent, Rice Spearman said, for all of the graduates from this region, which include physical therapy, nursing, and medicine, their overall placement rate in the region is 75%. They also showed a video on its partnership with the clinic in Marathon to provide telemedicine. Benton said they also got a $3.4 million Health Resources and Services Administration grant in partnership with their physician assistant school. That amount is over 5 years, and it designated them as a Hispanic Center of Excellence. We are working within the junior high schools and high schools in Region 18, as well as networking universities in the Permian Basin to create that pipeline, Benton said. He added that it helps supplement their education. Dr. Phil Sizer, Associate Vice President for Research Innovation, talked about ways TTUHSC is increasing rural health care and telehealth support. They have started a drone program that can transport all manner of things, from flu shots to organs. Also on hand were Medical Center Hospital President, CEO Russell Tippin, Midland Memorial Hospital President Russell Myers, Tracy Bentley, President, CEO of Permian Strategic Partnership, and Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa. We were founded in 2018 with 20 of the larger oil and gas companies at that time who said we have big, big plans for the Permian Basin, 40, 50 years and beyond, Bentley said. In order to achieve what they wanted to achieve, we got to have a workforce to be able to do it, and they did an assessment of the region, Bentley said. They couldn't do everything, so they decided to focus their education, healthcare, infrastructure, and workforce development. Texas Tech University Health Science Center was one of their first partners in healthcare. We have directly invested, just in healthcare alone, $53 million, and $22 million of that is in Texas Tech Health Sciences Center, Bentley said. She listed the physician assistant program, surgery, subspecialties, and medicine on the move as some of the PSP's investments. This marks the second time a regularly scheduled Board of Regents meeting has been held in Odessa and the first since 2002. The board's first meeting at a non-Lubbock campus was in the Permian Basin in Midland in 1999. Total, the board has held three regularly scheduled meetings at TTUHSC campus locations in the past 10 years, including 2013 in Abilene, 2020 Amarillo, and now Odessa. Jury awards damage to Houston Oilfield Company by Kim Smith. A Fort Bend County jury Wednesday awarded more than $2 million in damages and more than $5.3 million in attorney's fees to a Houston Oilfield pump and valve company that claimed Odessans stole trade secrets and employees from them. The jury determined Odessa Toby Eoff willfully and maliciously acquired trade secrets from Distribution Now and failed to comply with his fiduciary duty to the company. However, they did not assess any punitive damages against him and decided he was only 1% responsible for the fact the company had to pay retention bonuses to keep employees and suffered losses in San Angelo and Corpus Christi. Court documents show the jury answered yes when asked if Eoff was part of a conspiracy that damaged Distribution Now, and no to the same question later on in the 35-page verdict form. Distribution Now filed a lawsuit in June 2022 alleging EOF and a dozen others conspired to steal trade secrets to benefit Permian Pump and Valve, an Odessa-based company launched by EOF after he sold Odessa Pumps to Distribution Now for $170 million. Specifically, Distribution Now claimed EOF stole a spreadsheet containing information about customer commissions. The company's attorneys further alleged the 13 defendants were unjustly enriched by their actions, and Distribution Now was forced to spend money to keep their employees from defecting, lost profits, and were entitled to exemplary or punitive damages. The attorney said roughly 30 employees left Distribution Now. EOF's attorney, Mark Levine, said his client sold Odessa Pumps in July 2015 to Distribution Now, but he stayed with the company until April 21, 2022. A non-compete clause he signed expired in July 2018, and he declined to sign a new one on the day he left the company, Levine said. He was totally free to do whatever he wanted when he left DNow, Levine said. On his last day, Levine said EOF emailed himself several things that were in his inbox, including one document that pertained to his compensation. The evidence showed the document was not a trade secret, nor was it shared with anyone, Levine said. Levine also said there was no evidence EOF helped or even knew anyone else was trying to steal trade secrets from Distribution Now. In his opinion, Levine said, Distribution Now has focused a lot of their attention on EOF because they wanted to stop him from competing in the industry. They even unsuccessfully sought a restraining order last year that would have prevented him from investing in the oil field pump industry, he said. According to court documents, the jury was asked to assign a percentage of the blame for Distribution Now's damages. They assigned 50% blame to Clayton Kenworthy, 45% to Permian Pump and Valve, and 5% to Bo Young. Levine said Kenworthy and Permian Pump and Valve settled before the case went to trial. Levine noted the plaintiffs asked for $32 million in damages during closing arguments and argued EOF should have to pay 86% of that amount. The jury awarded roughly $2 million and said none of it should come from EOF, Levine said. Court documents show the jury wants the following defendants to pay the following punitive damages to Distribution Now. Brian Madison, $100,000. Bo Young, $100,000. Michael Wheeler, $75,000. Justin Coe, $50,000. And Kale Gerritsen, Ryan Hibbets, Michael Kaspar, and Jacob Llewellyn, $25,000 each. The documents also show the jury awarded Distribution Now $225,000 for the retention bonuses they paid out, $117,311 for lost productivity, and $1.4 million for lost profits. They awarded nothing for restricted stock awards, compensation increases the company said it provided to keep employees on board, and for the defendant's unjust enrichment. The jury said Kenworthy and Permian Pump and Valve should be responsible for 80% of those amounts, and Young and Madison should pay 5% each. Coe, they said, should have to pay 2% of the balance, and EOF and seven other defendants should have to pay 1% each. The judge on the case must now look at the verdict and enter a formal judgment, Levine said. Levine said he intends to file an appeal because, based on the juror's findings, he doesn't believe EOF should have to pay attorney's fees. We believe he will be vindicated, Levine said. Ector County Sheriff's Office identifies man involved in dumpster death. The man killed in a freak accident Thursday while jumping from a dumpster has been identified as 45-year-old Brandon Altman. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said an initial investigation determined Altman was inside a dumpster at West University Boulevard and North Roundup Avenue when a trash truck arrived around 6 o'clock a.m. Surveillance video showed Altman jumping from the dumpster as it was almost to the point of dumping into the truck, and he struck his head on the pavement, Griffiths said. Authorities searching for missing 15-year-old. Authorities are asking the public's help in locating a 15-year-old girl who has been missing since early December and might be in the La Mesa area. Chuck Flieger, executive director of the Amber Alert Network Buzzes Valley, said Hannah Joan Vandiver left her legal guardians in College Station on November 27th and again December 3rd, and she is believed to be with people who could place her in danger of death or serious bodily injury. Based on information we have, we believe she's probably in West Texas. She has ties to biological family members she shouldn't be with, Flieger said, declining to elaborate. Vandiver is 5 feet tall, 150 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. Anyone with information is asked to call the College Station Police Department at 979-764-3600. Bill M. Pollard. Billy Maurice Pollard, 89, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, February 21, 2023. He was born September 22, 1933, in Altus, Oklahoma, to the late Elsie Wayne Harris and James Arthur Pollard. Bill is survived by Barbara Ann Pollard, his wife of 69 years, and his children Linda Gail Shannon, Teresa Reed, Judy Rogers, David Pollard, and Darla Becker. He also loved his 14 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. Bill's family includes sister-in-law Margaret Windham, Betty Fincher, and Linda Mueller, plus several nieces and nephews. Bill was preceded in death by his parents, brother Wayne Pollard, sister-in-law Mary Coena, brother-in-law Mickey Dooley, and Jay Gilbert, his grandson. The family will receive friends for visitation at Frank Wilson Funeral Directors on Monday, February 27, 2023, from 5 to 8 p.m. with the Rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be celebrated on Tuesday, February 28, 2023, at 10 a.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. A private interment will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations to Bill's favorite charity, Catholic Charities Community Services. John Edwards. John H. Trey Edwards III died February 8, 2023, at his home in Southlake, Texas. Trey was born December 10, 1929, to Jack John H. Edwards Jr. and Francis Sam Edwards. Trey was preceded in death by his wife Barbara and is survived by his 3 sons, Jay, Lee, and Tom, several grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and his sister Ellen Edwards Green. Memorials or donations may be made to the John H. Edwards III 51 Memorial Endowed Scholarship, Texas A&M University, at tx.ag/Trey Edwards, or the West Texas Boys Ranch, 10223 Boys Ranch Road, San Angelo, Texas, 76904. Jerry Don Wright. Jerry Don Wright, 79, of Odessa, died Wednesday, February 22, 2023, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.